Would you please be seated as Hilary comes to the front and joins us? Well, there you are. Hello.
I decided to leave the juggling balls behind.
Excellent. So before Hilary gives her sermon, I've got a few questions for her. Well, the key one is this, and I think it's really relevant for all of us, is what will you be doing this time tomorrow?
Monday. This time tomorrow, I'll probably just put the shopping away.
Okay. Exciting stuff.
It's truly exciting, Mondays.
Yeah, yeah. So Mondays can sometimes be a bit of a letdown after the weekend, can't they? That return to normality.
I think it's the recovery day in many ways.
Okay, a recovery day. Yes, it probably certainly will be for you. Yes. What's the highlight of your week, though?
Highlight of my week? I don't think I can give you one. I think there are many. And okay. Coming here on a Sunday morning and seeing all the friendly faces is definitely one. Mm-hmm. Another one would be the group that I meet with on a Wednesday evening, where we get up to all kinds of silly things.
Right.
If you'd have seen us last Wednesday, you'd have seen us charging around the common trying to find the answers to cryptic clues and failing miserably in most cases.
Okay, so what group is that?
That is National Women's Register.
National Women's Register, right.
Used to be.
Is that for women who have to go on a register?
Well, I think probably most of us should be.
No, okay, fair
enough. Used to be called National Housewives Register until housewife became a pejorative term.
Right. Okay. And are there times in a normally ordinary week where you feel that your faith is something that speaks to you or something that's particularly relevant?
Yes. I think at the moment there are probably two for me. One of them is a Tuesday evening when I go into Cambridge to St Andrews in Chesterton and people try and teach me things that I find very difficult to understand. But before that, we always have a service of evening prayer in St Andrews, Chesterton, and it's got the most amazing doom painting. So I sort of sit and stare at the doom painting, and I think it would almost be feel washed by the years of people's prayers and my participation in them. It's wonderful. If you haven't been to St Andrews, Chesterton, I recommend it. The other time would be our Wednesday morning communion. It is lovely to meet with a smallish group of people who've become very dear to me over the years.
There we go. Okay, thank you. Thank you for sharing those little things.
Pleasure.
And maybe reflect on those questions for yourself. What will you be doing this time tomorrow? And what are the highlights of your week? And amongst all of that, in the ordinary and the extraordinary, are the times when you feel that your faith connects with ordinary life? And where maybe you have one of those strange meetings with God, as we heard about in our Bible reading. I'm going to let Hilary preach her sermon now.
Oh, good. May my words and all our thoughts be acceptable to you, O Lord, our Redeemer. So, when I looked at this morning's gospel reading, two things struck me. One is a clear message of obedience. And the other, being me, is why 153 fish in verse 11? So let's start with the 153 fish. The verse says that the net was full of large fish, 153 of them. And although there were so many, the net wasn't torn. Perhaps, I don't know, but to me, 153 just doesn't seem to be a particularly large number. Perhaps it's because we live in a society where large numbers are now the norm. The children I teach happily talk about Googleplexes. Well, I had to look that one up, and apparently it's 10 followed by 100 zeros. A number so huge that it really is beyond my comprehension. So back to the fish. Why 153? Well, there's the miracle called the internet, and every website I looked at gave a different answer. For the mathematically minded, 153 is apparently the 17th triangular number, but I can't really see that that's the reason that John was so specific about it. A commentary by the 4th century theologian Jerome suggested that 153 represented all the species of fish that existed, and that there was, therefore, room in the church for all races of men. And Augustine went on to add that all these races were saved by the gospel net. Or perhaps it just was a miraculously large catch after the disciples had obeyed Jesus' injunction to cast the net out again to the right side of the boat after a night of fruitless fishing. Of course, according to John, the disciples didn't know that it was Jesus, but nevertheless, they obeyed. I have to admit that I find it quite amazing that they so willingly went through the process of casting their net again. They must have been tired and fed up after a night of fruitless fishing, but they did as the stranger commanded. It seems that it was only after they had a catch that was too heavy to haul into the boat that the disciple whom Jesus loved, for that is how John refers to himself, realized that the stranger was indeed the risen Jesus. When they got to the shore, leaving the net of fish in the water, they found fish cooking on a charcoal fire and bread to go with it. Jesus told them to bring some of the fish they had caught to add to the feast, and Simon Peter went and hauled the net ashore, full of the 153 fish. Again, an interesting point to consider, because previously the fishermen had been unable to haul in their net because it was so heavy. Perhaps it's just easier to haul it ashore, I don't know. The disciples obeyed Jesus and they caught a large, maybe miraculous catch. After breakfast, it was Simon Peter's time to demonstrate his obedience to Jesus. The reading doesn't make it clear whether Jesus took Simon Peter to one side for the conversation that followed. He had some questions for Simon Peter, or rather, three very similar questions about whether Simon Peter loved him. Each time, Jesus used the formal mode of address, Simon, son of John, asking firstly if Simon Peter loved him more than the others. Simon Peter's response was simple. Yes, Lord, you know that I love you. Jesus then tells him, feed my lambs. You might have thought that Jesus would be happy that Simon Peter would obey. But no. Once again, he inquires if Simon Peter loves him. Simon Peter makes an identical response to the first time, and this time is told, tend my sheep. Simon Peter must surely have thought that Jesus would be satisfied that he would obey now. But no, the question is repeated yet again. Perhaps by now Simon Peter is catching on, but he is certainly feeling hurt. Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Perhaps at the back of his mind, Simon Peter is remembering a fire in the high priest's courtyard not so many days before, and the three questions that he was asked then. It would not have been a happy memory for him, rather a memory of his inability to admit to knowing Jesus, a memory of abandoning his Lord. But Jesus replies, feed my sheep. He is redeemed. However, Jesus has not finished with Simon Peter. Having secured his obedience with regard to the future of Jesus' flock, mankind, Jesus then indicated Simon Peter's future, a future which, although it would glorify God, would most definitely take Simon Peter where he would not wish to go. Jesus then once again asked for Simon Peter's obedience when he said, follow me. Simon Peter's restored faith would not fail again. He might make mistakes, but he would never again deny Christ, even when threatened with the imminent prospect of his own death. We are lucky. We live in a society where we do not have to hide our faith to avoid possible imprisonment or even death, as is the case in some parts of the world. Copies of the Bible are readily available. They do not have to be smuggled in, as was the case when Brother Andrew smuggled Bibles to believers behind the Iron Curtain during the Cold War. But I wonder how many of us have downplayed our Christian faith when faced with people whom we know may mock us, who may have preferred to keep our Christian faith quiet rather than speaking out, who have sidestepped opportunities to share our faith, believing that others are much better fitted to such work. I know I must plead guilty as charged, but I hope, with God's help, I will do a better job of obeying Jesus' instruction to follow him in the future. Will you join me? One honest testament to God's love is priceless and may help others who didn't realise they needed it to share it.
Thank you, Hilary.